Krishna and Sudama were good friends, isn't it? And once they went to get the firewood for their guru, Sandipani Muni, and there was a big storm, isn't it? And then when there was a big storm, then there's a very nice picture, Sudama and Krishna, they in one hand they are holding each other's hand, and in the other hand they are holding the firewood. And the acharyas say this is how our movement should be. In one hand we should hold the orders of the spiritual master. We should do our service of sharing this beautiful Krishna bhakti with everyone. But in the other hand, we should hold each other's hand. We should be friends. Otherwise we are in the Krishna consciousness movement, but this is not just the office. This is not just a military base. This is not just a hotel. No, this is our home. So we must all be friends. We must all be kind with each other. When we see each other in the corridor, we should also say, Hare Krishna. Maybe we can also ask each other, how are you doing? How is life? We must be personal with each other. I'm saying this because I'm very impersonal. But in this movement, we must be personal, because we are, Srila Prabhupada said, my temples are embassies of the spiritual world. Understand? Embassy means even you're not in that place, but because it's an embassy, it feels like you're already there. Like in London, they have Indian embassy. So if you go to the Indian embassy, it can be snowing outside, but in the Indian embassy, there is a fan on the top, and the fan is going. And you think, why is there a fan? It's London, it's snowing, and inside there's a fan. And then there's no queuing. Person on the counter is chewing pan. None of the machines work. So already you feel, I am already in India. Yeah, we also, no? So when we come to the Hare Krishna temple, we should feel, oh, this is what Vaikuntha is like. We should not feel, oh, this is what Kurukshetra is like. Kurukshetra. Maybe we'll skip that one. Yeah, so this must be very nice. We are family, we are community. We don't see, here is an Indian, here is a German, here is a Russian. We don't see, here's a man, here's a woman. Everyone is Vaishnava, and we try to respect, we try to serve, and we try to see that everyone is very, very dear to Krishna. And in that way, we create very nice friendships. So thank you for your friendship. We are holding your hand, Sudama, just like Krishna was holding. And thank you all of you. While we've been here just a few days, but it feels like so nice to be with all of you. So many smiling faces, happy devotees. And today we will do some questions and answers. Agreed? So think of your questions. Separating the material world and the spiritual world. Do you know what separates the material world and the spiritual world? There is something separating. You know what it is? The river. The river. Yeah. Brahmajyoti is there, but the river is called the Viraja. Viraja means the causal ocean. So between the spiritual world and the material world, there is causal ocean. I'm just letting you know that if you want to go back to home, back to Godhead, you better learn how to swim. You will have to cross. But don't worry, Krishna will take you. So when Vamandev, Krishna, when he was actually stepping through the universe, isn't it? Because Bali Maharaj agreed to give him 3 steps of land, so he stepped and covered the whole universe. But it said that when he was covering the universe, his toe pierced the material universe, and then what happened? That causal ocean came into the universe via his foot. And what is that causal ocean that came via his foot into the material world? Ganges, Ganga. So today you can go to Ganga, isn't it? Where Ganga is descending in this world. And it said that when Ganga descends into the universe, then it purifies the 3 worlds, the upper, middle and the lower planets all are purified, the three worlds. So in the same way, the commentators, they say when we do Krishna Katha, when we do discussions of spiritual topics, then three people are purified: the speaker, the listener, and the questioner. The one who is asking questions also gets spiritual purification. So I'm just telling you that so you feel some inspiration to ask a question. So we must always ask questions, because through questions we can gain the knowledge and insight which will help us to go back to the spiritual world. So today you can ask questions. You can maybe ask questions about some philosophical topic that you may not be clear about. Maybe you want to ask some question about how to practice Krishna consciousness, so we can talk about that. Maybe you want to ask some question about the movement and our communities and how we can improve, so we can talk about that. And maybe you want to ask some question about the world around us, what's happening, how does Krishna consciousness explain these things. And maybe you can also, if you like, you can also challenge and ask me some questions of the atheists, of the scientists, of people who don't have faith in Krishna consciousness, and how do we answer their doubts. Yeah, is that okay? So let's do some question and answer. And when you ask a question, then what I will do is I'll repeat it so that the online audience can also hear. Okay, so who will begin with the first question?
May I start with the question from yesterday?
You start with the question from yesterday. Yeah, okay, go for it.
Devotee on, who is online, he asked yesterday.
Yeah, do we have a roaming microphone? Is it, or another second microphone? This is it?
No. Yes, so we'll check now. Yes.
We'll check? Okay.
Yes.
Until we get that, you can say and I'll repeat.
What if a devotee who is chanting 16 rounds daily at the time of death does not remember Krishna? Where does he go?
What about a devotee who is chanting 16 rounds but at the time of death may not remember Krishna? Where does he go? Okay. So the first thing to understand, Krishna says, Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram Ya prayati samadbhavam yati nasyatra samsayaha. Antakale, at the last moment, whatever you remember, that is what you'll become. So why does Krishna say that? Because what we remember at the time of death, that will reflect generally what is deepest and closest to us in the heart, isn't it? When someone like has a near-death experience, then they say, my whole life flashed before me. So what is most important to you, you will remember at the time of death, generally. Therefore, Krishna is saying, whatever you remember at the time of death, that's where you'll go, because that will reflect your deepest desire. So now, what if someone is chanting 16 rounds and they don't remember Krishna at death? To answer that question, we have to ask, why is it that they didn't remember Krishna? Maybe the first reason is that they may have been chanting 16 rounds, but they may have been chanting 16 inattentive rounds. Then if you're chanting 16 inattentive rounds, then Krishna can't take responsibility. Then Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Bahu janma kare jadi shravana kirtan Tabutana paye Krishna pade premadhan. Someone may do hearing and chanting bahu janma for many lifetimes. Tabutana paye Krishna pade premadhan. But they may not get prema if they are inattentive or offensive. So Srila Prabhupada did not just say chant 16 rounds. He also said chant 16 rounds and avoid the 10 offenses. So the first question we have to ask is, if they are not remembering because they were inattentive rounds, then we have to take responsibility. But if sometimes it may happen that someone is a very sincere devotee and at the end of life there's some acute situation in which it's very difficult for them to remember Krishna because of the material situation, then what does Krishna say in 15th chapter of Gita? Sarvasya chaham hridi sanivishto mata smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Krishna says, I'm seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So we can understand that if someone is a sincere devotee, they're chanting their rounds, they have love for Krishna, but at the end of life, if something acute happens where they can't remember Krishna, then Krishna will come in their consciousness and give them remembrance. And in that way, Krishna will help. So the point is, we have to do what we can do from our side to practice diligently, and then we have to see and rely on Krishna. Does that make sense? Is okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, yes. Yes.
I have a question, maybe it's a pretty basic one, but sometimes I'm asking myself, so on. You're hearing a lot that you have to be sure that bhakti is the only thing which makes us happy, and material satisfaction can't make us happy, but if we are working and doing it in the beginning, sometimes we're getting confused and don't get this whole
higher taste.
Sure, and sometimes I'm not sure, and this is like my first question, and the second is also how to develop this love, because I mean we don't have it, I mean I don't have it currently, and how to be sure that only bhakti can make me happy, even though there are so many things outside I am desiring.
Yeah, so on one, we are saying that there's no happiness in the material world and that only happiness is in bhakti. But sometimes we are not feeling like this. We are also feeling like, yeah, some attraction to the things outside there. So how do we deal with this? Well, Krishna is explaining, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina rasovarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. Krishna says, if you tell someone to not do any material enjoyment just by forcing them, then they will not be fixed in consciousness. The only way they will be fixed in consciousness, rasovarjam rasopyasya param drishtva, if they get a higher taste. So how are we going to convince you that there's no more happiness in the material world? We can't hit you over the head with a Bhagavad Gita and force you to believe that. But we can share with you that there's this beautiful process, and then ultimately you have to practice it. You have to look at the world and you have to then conclude, yeah, what is out there in the world? What will it really make me happy? See, when I was coming to Krishna consciousness, I started university. I read Bhagavad Gita when I was 16. By 18, I was chanting and I went to university. So I was living outside in London, in university, young. Then you can fill in the blanks, what happens from there. So one night I was going, it was a very nice time in my life, because one night I was going out with my friends. And then the next morning, I was going to the temple. One night, I was dancing in some dark place with strobe lights. And then straight after, at 4:30 in the morning, I was dancing in front of Krishna. So I was seeing two lives side by side. And very quickly, it became apparent to me that one process is bringing some deeper happiness, and in another process people are trying very hard, but I don't think there's much there. So can we convince you? No, we can give you some faith, we can give you some option, but ultimately you have to experience it for yourself. And therefore we are not saying there's no happiness in the material world. But what we are saying is that happiness is of a lower quality. Basically, when you try to find happiness through material things, one of four things will happen. Scenario one, you will try to find happiness in material things and you won't get those things. Frustration. Scenario two, you will look for happiness in material things, you'll get that thing, but then you'll feel this doesn't bring any taste. Frustration. Scenario three, you look for happiness in material things, you'll get it, it tastes good, but then after some time it will disappear. Frustration. And scenario four, you'll get something, it will taste good, it will even remain for some time, but along with that thing will come many other negative things that you didn't want. Frustration. So basically, if you try to find happiness in material things, you will be frustrated. Sometimes we say like this, people in the material world think, if I have time, if I have money, and if I have health, then I'll be happy. But even if that was true, when you're young, you have health, you have time, no money. Isn't it? No money? Little pocket money, not enough money. Then when you grow up, when you're middle-aged, lots of money. And good health still.
No time.
Busy, moving. And when you're old, lots of time. Lots of money in the bank. But no health. Something is always missing. In material life, something will always be missing. So, how do you become convinced of that? You practice Krishna consciousness and you awaken the higher taste, and then you will realize there's nothing in the world which can compare to this. Well, you have to go on that journey. No one can convince you. That has to be your own realization. Is that okay? Thank you. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. One question is, if we meet on the street or relatives or somehow people who we try to give them a Krishna consciousness or tell them about it, but they are honest with us and they say,
I'm not interested. Yeah.
Yes, not even interested. Full of desires and like this, and it isn't offense. For example, they knowing that, for example, that you also know that they will make offenses when they're chanting Hare Krishna, Ma Mantra. So should we still try to bring them, or should, because doing offenses is also maybe, I don't know, maybe it's not so good for spiritual advancement. That's my question.
Yeah, well, ultimately, somehow or other, we are trying to connect people to the Maha Mantra. Therefore, we do Harinam, isn't it? And then people say, oh, Hare Krishna, Hare, and then they make fun like that. But even then, they get benefit. Sixth canto says, Sanketyam parihasyam vai stobam helanamevava vaikunthanama grahanam asheshagabaharam vidum. In Ajamiyo's pastime, there is a verse which says, even if one chants jokingly, even if they chant neglectfully, even if they chant indicating something else, Vaikunthanam, because they've grasped the name which is coming from a different realm, Asheshaga Harem Vidum, mountains of sinful activities will be moved. So, you know, in the beginning, somehow or other, we are inducing people that they should chant. Because just by taking the name, just by being involved, even if they are not practicing all the rules and regulations, still it's good. But then once you become a devotee, then we're encouraging people. Now you have to like give up. So devotees, we are like, we are tricking people. Because in the beginning we tell them, you don't have to change your life, just chant Hare Krishna. Which if you later on you'll realize is a complete lie. And because we are all the proof. Yes, you don't carry on doing what you're doing. Just add a little bit of Krishna. And before you know it, there's so much Krishna there, there's nothing left for anything else. So in the beginning, we just give people a little bit of Krishna. Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna niveshayat. This way or that way, somehow or other, connect them to Krishna. So yeah, do what you can to connect people to Krishna. And then gradually, but of course, if they are going to be offensive or say something bad, then we don't chant the glories of the holy name to the faithless. But most people are just innocent, so you give them an opportunity. And if they take Krishna's names, then something amazing will happen. There was someone who once, they had a girlfriend, and the girlfriend had a dog. And you know what the dog's name was? Krishna. And this dog somehow or other used to run away in the middle of the night and run away into the... So then the girlfriend would tell the boy, you go out and find the dog, go on. Okay. He'd be running through the middle of the night, Krishna, where are you? Krishna, come home. Krishna, I'm looking for you. And what happened? He became a devotee, became a sannyasi. He became His Holiness Kadambakananda Swami. So that is the power of the name. Shanketyam parihasyam vai stobam helanameva. Even if you chant indicating something else, the name. Nam nohi yavati shakti papa nirharane. You cannot understand the power of the name. So yeah, you try to be kind and try to connect people to the process and then give them your friendship and then gradually help them to refine the way in which they see Krishna consciousness. But generally it's always better that someone will be connected with us. You know, we cannot expect from the beginning that everyone will follow everything. But at least if they come, then there's some connection. I don't know, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you carry on, yes.
Another question is, like, there are different dams, like for example, Vrindavan Dam, Mayapur Dam, Puri Dam, and I'm not sure, so if you can correct me if I'm false, but I think Jagannath Das Babaji, he went in old age from Vrindavan to Mayapur, Navadvip, because he was conscious of the merciful nature of the dam. So for example, someone who maybe thinks about living in a dam, should he like consider
going to Mayapur?
Yeah, to Mayapur, Ekachakra Dam or Puri Dam or...
Okay.
For example, the most simple, which dam should he take shelter?
Good question, nice question. Yeah, so there are many dhams, and which dam should we take shelter of? Every dham or holy place is having a unique quality. So Vrindavan is known as Madhurya Dham, or the place of sweetness. Jagannath Puri is known as Viraha Dham, or the place of separation, because Krishna's eyes are very big, isn't it? And why are his eyes big? Because he's remembering Vrindavan and he's in separation. So Jagannath Puri is said to be the place of separation, Viraha Dham. And Mayapur is said to be Audarya Dham, which means the place of great magnanimity. It's said that even if you are sleeping in Mayapur, Gauranga takes it that you are paying obeisances. So don't just go to Mayapur and sleep all day thinking. But still, Gauranga is seeing, oh, just see, he's lying down, he's paying obeisances, very kind, always trying to see the good. So it's said that Mayapur is the place from which you can get a lot of mercy. It's said that in Kali Yuga, Vrindavan will become more and more covered, actually. And Mayapur will become more and more revealed. And therefore, Mayapur will eventually become the world headquarters, the spiritual headquarters, the spiritual capital of the world. So generally, yes, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, many were taking shelter in Mayapur Dham. However, the Bhagavatam also says this, Yatirta buddhi shalilena karhichit janeshva bigyeshu sa eva gokhara, that the ultimate purpose of going to a holy place is that you can have very good Sangha. If you go to a holy place but you don't have good Sangha, you will not be able to actually derive the benefit. And therefore, many times devotees may go to Vrindavan, they may go to Mayapur. Many times, even senior devotees in our movement, when it came to their final days, they didn't go to even to any of those dhams. They stayed in the temple where they were, in the Western world. Because ultimately for the Vaishnavas, we stay ultimately where we can chant and hear about Krishna in very good association. Because what does the Purana say? Krishna says, Naham tistami vaikunthe yoginam vidayeshuva yatra gayanti madbhakta tatra tistami narada. I'm not just situated in Vaikuntha, I'm not just situated in the hearts of the yogis. Yatra gayanti madbhakta, wherever my devotees are chanting, tatra tistami, I'm there. So for example, you have someone like Bhakti Tirtha Swami. In his final days, he stayed in America. He did not go to the dham, because there his community was there and they were rich. So we all go to Mayapur to get mercy. And then eventually we get that mercy and then we stay in a place where we can have very good association. And if that's Mayapur, Vrindavan, Puri or the West, that ultimately is secondary, because the main thing is to have good association. But yes, you should go to Mayapur and get the mercy. It said in Jagannath Puri, the mercy is available through what?
Prasadam.
In Vrindavan, the mercy is available through what? Dust. And in Mayapur, the mercy is available through?
Sleeping.
Mercy is available through Naam, the name. Name, chanting in Mayapur, very powerful. So yes, everyone should go to Mayapur. It's a great opportunity. Yes, very nice. Thank you. Yes.
So are you planning some yatra so that you can join?
In the future, yes, we can all go together. Why not? We can go to Mayapur, we can go to Puri, we can go to so many Vrindavan, so many places. At the moment, we don't have any specific plans, but we can go all together. This is what we should do in our life. We have to take shelter of the holy places. You see, like, there is a condition in the world called amnesia. You heard amnesia? Sometimes someone falls and they bang their head. And after banging their head, they forget about everything. They forget who they were, where they were, what they were doing. Almost overnight. I once met someone like that. In one night, they forgot everything. They could not recognize anyone or anything. Very amazing condition. But all of us actually have that condition because we have spiritual amnesia. We've forgotten who we are, where we are, what we're supposed to be doing. So when someone has this condition, then the way you jog their memory is you take them back to the places where they were. And then they see, oh, this was my school and this was where I lived. And then gradually by being in that environment, they again remember. So we go to the dham. Sometimes we go to India, we go to Vrindavan, and it feels like, my God, this is another world, you know, like completely alien. But actually this is our home. But we've just forgotten. So therefore we have to spend time there and we have to remember, oh, actually this is my eternal home. This is where I live eternally with Krishna. They say Vrindavan is the playground of God. The playground of God, very nice. So, yes, we should go. So you sponsor all of us to go. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
My sponsorship is inspiration that...
It's sponsoring the inspiration. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, where there is inspiration, other things will come. Yes, yes.
I have a question, Maharaj. When we are in the beginning days of Krishna consciousness, everything looks like flowery, very poetic, very enthusiastic, so sweet. Like we say, wow, this is a unique experience. But gradually this appreciation diminishes when we are interacting with the devotees more closer. Maybe initially we are not so close, that's why we are only seeing those.
Yeah, in the beginning. It's like they say, in the beginning you think everyone's a pure devotee, isn't it?
Yes.
Every devotee, you can see them with four arms. You know, like, wow, it's a devotee, amazing. So you think everyone's a pure devotee. Then as you stay longer, you think, well, I don't know if everyone, maybe a few of them are pure devotees, maybe a few. And then later on you think, I don't think any of these are pure devotees, but I think maybe I'm a pure devotee. And then later on you think, even I'm not a pure devotee, I don't think it exists, you know. So over time we are seeing that, yes, maybe everyone is not a pure devotee. Of course there are pure devotees. His Holiness Gaur Govinda Maharaj once said, the world, the earth cannot spin unless there is a pure devotee on the planet. Interesting statement. Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he once said, the earth cannot spin unless there is a pure devotee on the planet. His logic was that the purpose of the material world is to go back home, back to Godhead. Otherwise, why does Krishna create the material world? It's only so that living entity. But unless there are pure devotees, how you will go back home, back to Godhead? So Krishna has to always arrange that some pure devotees are always here. In my life, I saw actually that I feel like I underestimated the devotees a lot. I saw devotees day to day, maybe I did not appreciate them so much, and then later on many of them left the world and many of them showed that actually they were very, very advanced. And then I realized, oh no, I saw them in a material way. I realized in this movement that the saints are not just the people that we read about in the Bhagavatam or the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The saints are living even today. But the problem is we are not appreciating them because we become familiar. So your question is, how do we avoid becoming familiar? Or no?
My question is in similar lines, but if you talk about community development and devotee care and all these things, it has to do with intimacy.
Yeah.
It can't formalism or office way of living, but actually home way of living.
Spending time together.
In that intimacy, sometimes... are we dealing with devotees still, or are we dealing with again some close associates or family member? How to still have the mood that we have intimacy at the same time they are
respect.
Devotees, we should be careful. So how to gauge or...
Intimacy and respect are not... they are not like in competition. Intimacy and respect should actually go together. Right? I understand what you're saying. Sometimes intimacy can mean that you just become too familiar and then become disrespectful. So how to balance that? But actually, we're understanding that if we... basically, the most important point is we have to be personal with each other. This is the hardest thing in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, the hardest thing is for all of us to be personal with each other. Because basically, impersonalism is very deep within each one of us. So the first thing is community. If you look at the next word, which is very close to community, the next word is communication. So one of the first reasons why community doesn't build is because there's no communication. One time I realized I was living in one temple and I was living across the room from someone, and in 20 years I never had a longer conversation than 20 seconds with that person. How is that possible? I realized I was at a temple for 20 years and there are people who are coming here, you know, every week, and I still don't know their name. One person, it was so embarrassing, after 15 years of seeing him, I went up to him one day, I said, "Prabhu, what's your name?" It's like, after so many years, you don't know who this person is? So we are so impersonal. Someone is going through some challenge, we must reach out. We must be kind. Someone is successful. We can also go and say, "Congratulations, I heard this happened to you. Very nice. I'm so happy for you." These things go a long distance. In ISKCON, we have many barriers to overcome. Like I was saying yesterday, culturally, we all come from different places. So that already creates a barrier. For example, the way Indian people act and Western people act is different. It's not that one is right and one is wrong, but it's just different. Yeah, a simple thing. For an Indian, if you go like this, it means good. Yeah, very good. But for that means no, that means bad. Even when Prabhupada, when he saw the devotees first time doing Harinam, then they saw him in the window. And you know, like in India, you go like this, to call someone, you go like this. But they didn't know that, so they thought Prabhupada was going like this. Go away. Now you're saying, no, come, he was very happy. But they were thinking he was telling them, go away. So just simple cultural things, we're very different. You know, for example, the way Eastern people have humor is very different to like, you know, Russian people or German people, is very different type of humor. So for you, something is very funny, for them it's offensive. So you see, we have to learn to understand each other. We have to learn to overcome, we have to communicate, we have to be together. And we have to come out of our, you know, sometimes there are people who we feel comfortable with. And so generally we will always stay there. But what we have to do in our communities is gradually start coming out to the people we don't usually speak to, the people we don't usually have interactions, and try to understand and connect. So communication is very, very important. You know, coming together as a community, sometimes we can also have istagosti. Now in ISKCON, if you say istagosti, it means like a meeting to raise all your managerial issues. This is what they think istagosti is. Actually, istagosti means devotees just coming together and sharing their realizations with each other. That's what it means. It's not a managerial meeting to figure out how to overthrow the temple president or something. You know? is to come and have Sangha together. So this is what Vaishnavas do. So I don't pretend to sit here as someone, I am also battling, you know. I realized in my life I'm very impersonal. But unless we overcome this impersonalism, we can't really have community. So we have to be, let us start by at least saying hello to each other. Let us start by learning everyone's names. Let us start by asking devotees how they're doing and praising, you know, encouraging them when they do well, helping them when they're struggling. And one other important thing is we should never judge others. This is one thing. Sometimes we see people across the room and without even speaking to them, we have judged them. And then this blocks the relationship from the beginning. Have you heard of Jayananda Prabhu? Jayananda Prabhu was Srila Prabhupada's very early disciple. So once there was one devotee, and he had, in the early days they say he blooped. You understand the word blooped? It means they left the movement. I think this sound is on. And anyway, he left the movement, and of all jobs, do you know what job he took up? Of all the jobs he could have took up, he became a butcher. So Jayananda heard, oh, he's become a butcher. So Jayananda said, let me go and meet him. Let me go and meet him. So he went to this meat shop. So he said, is this person here? So he said, yeah, he's in the back. So Jayananda was there, dhoti, tilak, in the middle of this slaughter place. Jai Shri Shivajai Gauranga Dwamitai Ki. So Jayananda was in the middle of this shop now. So he said, I want to see. He said, oh no, he's in the back. So Jayananda walked and he went into the kitchen. You can imagine what the kitchen of a butcher shop is like. All these cows. And anyway, then he saw this one in the distance, this ex-devotee. And the devotee had apron full of blood. And in his hand he had a knife. And Jayananda, when he saw him, you know what he did? He just ran up to him and he hugged him. And he said, oh, I found you after so long. Great to see you. I was missing you so much. And he just started speaking to him as a friend. He never said any bad thing. Why are you doing this? How could you do this? Why come back? He just said, so happy to see you. And after some time, Jayananda Prabhu left, and the devotee, the very next day, he came back to the temple. He said, this man, he touched my heart because he did not judge me. He just gave me love. So many times we are judging others, and then we are, oh, they look like that. Why is that person? That person never smiles. Have you ever seen? There's some people. They never smile. You think, what's this person's problem? Obviously, they admire, they have some issue. Some people are just like that. You can't. One time, one person said to Srila Prabhupada, he was looking at Prabhupada's passport photo, and he said, Prabhupada, you look very sad in this picture. Prabhupada said, that was the most ecstatic moment of my life. I said, really? Prabhupada said, yes, because I was getting my passport picture done. I was going to the West to fulfill the order of my spiritual master. I was very happy. It was most ecstatic. So you look very sad. So we judge people. Oh, did you see how that person, did this or did that? And then we judge. And then we create a block. So, Srila Prabhupada will be so happy if we can be the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, if we can actually be one family, if we can actually show to the world that here we have a community with so many people from so many different cultures who are all living together in good friendship. That's actually the best preaching. It's such a beautiful thing. But there must be communication. And then when the intimacy comes, there won't be disrespect, because we associate on spiritual principles. You see, when intimacy is built on spiritual principles, there will never be disrespect. What is the spiritual principle of how to associate? Dadati pratigranati guhyam akhyati prachyati bhungte bhojayate cheva sadvida. Priti lakshanam. Priti lakshanam. Exchanges of love. What does it mean to associate? We should understand. Dadati. Give someone a gift. Prati granati. When they give you a gift, accept it. Have you noticed sometimes we even find it hard to accept a gift from someone? For example, like if you're in the temple room and someone gives you a cushion, accept it. That's a loving exchange, isn't it? You think like, no, I won't accept it. I'll be austere, staunch, no cushion. But if someone has come to give you that gift, take it. It's a loving exchange to accept it. So give a gift, receive a gift. Guhyam, akhyati, prachati, reveal your mind. Open your heart to the devotees, tell them what you're going through. And what about the other one? Listen. Go in front of a devotee and say, is there anything you'd like to express? I'm here to listen to you. And that's very kind, no? To be there to listen to others when they are going through some problem. We have to be there also. And then the third one is very easy. Bhunkte bhojayate chaiva. Give them prasadam and take prasadam. Take prasadam together. Of course, we struggle with this one. Is it? We don't struggle with this one at all. It's so nice to serve the devotees, isn't it? Actually, if you go in original Gaudiya culture, the sannyasis actually serve. Because it's said that the opportunity to serve the devotees' prasadam is the greatest privilege. So actually, if you go, some years ago we went to Bangladesh. So if you go to Bangladesh, there you see the original Vaishnav culture. And there you will see the most senior devotees, they serve prasadam. It's a great honor to serve the devotees' prasadam. So when we associate in this way, we will develop intimacy, and at the same time, it will always be respectful. The intimacy won't create a familiarity or disrespect. But when we spend a lot of time with someone, if we're not exchanging in this way, then at some time we just become familiar. We see someone, oh, it's just another. Some points. Yes, Mataji at the back, yes.
Thank you very much. Regarding the serving prasadam,
yes.
Sometimes the devotees give the argument that they don't want to accept the service, you know, so therefore they don't permit anyone else to serve them. Can you say something to that?
They don't want to accept the service like out of humility, like they feel no one should serve them or like that? As I said, sometimes we have to understand this is a loving exchange. You see, Srila Prabhupada was once at the household of one life member. And so then they started serving prasadam. And then the devotee was sitting next to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, there's onions in the prasadam. So Prabhupada said, no, there's not. He said, no, there's Prabhupada, look, there's onions. Prabhupada said, no, there's not. Eat. No, but how are you? We promised. No meat, no fish, no onions, no. We promised. But Prabhupada said, no, because they have given out of love. And if you don't accept, it will be like offense. So now does that mean, of course this was a very, you know, exclusive, but the principle stands that for Vaishnavas, most important is loving exchange. Bhakti means a movement of loving exchange. If you take the loving exchange out, there's no bhakti anymore. Bhakti means loving exchange. So if someone wants to serve you prasadam, let them. It's nice. Let them accept that. Take the humble position and let them serve you. Yes, we should try. Like I said, it's not just that we should give service, but we should allow. Sometimes devotees want to serve us. What can we do? Srila Prabhupada was accepting so much service. It was so austere. Sometimes you see like Prabhupada is like, you know, so many garlands and Prabhupada is... It's an austerity. You know, the Vaishnava will feel, who am I? Why am I being glorified? Who am I to be glorified? But they do it to reciprocate with the loving exchange of the devotees who want to give something. So like that, our process is not to just be so staunch, so strict, so rigid, so like austere, our process is loving relationship. And therefore sometimes we have to also be a little soft-hearted. I'm preaching to myself, I'm so soft-hearted. But we must, this is our movement. I don't know, Mataji, if this helps.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Yes, Mataji.
Maharaj, could you please comment? One of the qualities of Vaishnavas is simplicity.
What does simplicity mean? Yes. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had an aphorism, like a saying, and his saying was Saralata e Vaishnavatva. Simplicity is Vaishnavism. He used to say this often. So what does it mean to be simple? We can say there is simplicity on the physical platform. Vaishnav is living very simple. How much does a Vaishnav need? Why did Vamandev only ask Bali Maharaj for 3 steps of land? Do you know what the significance of 3 steps is? Because if you walk 3 steps, that's the amount you need to lie down. Because I don't need much. There's 3 steps. Of course, his 3 steps. Okay. So first thing, simplicity means Vaishnava is simple in habits. Prabhupada says, what does a Vaishnava need? Little bit of prasadam, little bit of place to stay, and a little bit of service, and they're happy. So first thing is we try simple living, not simply living, hardly thinking. That's what most people are. This. So first aspect of simplicity means simplicity in habits. Yeah, live a simple life, not too much extravagance. Keep life simple. Second aspect of simplicity means simplicity in dealings with others. So that means Vaishnav should be very straightforward. Vaishnav should avoid doing politics, say one thing and then think something else, or be diplomatic here and then behind the back talk about someone else. No, try to be straightforward in your dealings. Try to always be honest and be genuine with people when you're speaking to them. And the third aspect of simplicity means that simplicity ultimately means I try to become a servant, a simple servant. I don't put myself to the front. I don't put myself to be glorified. I'm just happy to be, they say Vaishnav is like salt. Understand? In a preparation, can you eat the preparation if there's no salt? Can you eat? No, you can't. They may have cooked so nice, but if there's not enough salt, but have you ever heard someone glorify that prep, that cooking was amazing, you put just the right amount of salt? Does anyone ever glorify the salt? Never. But if the salt is not there, then you can't have anything. So Vaishnav is like salt. They're so important, but they're always in the back. They don't promote themselves. So this is simplicity of a Vaishnav, to stay at the back, to stay humble. Simplicity of a Vaishnav means integrity, straightforwardness in all dealings, and simplicity in habits, in how we live. When we live like this, then we can walk through this life with less anxiety. But the moment you try to complicate your life, 2 houses, 2 phones, 2 cars, too much, then it will be difficult. The moment you complicate your life by saying one thing to someone and then saying something to someone else and then speaking behind this person's back and then not being straightforward, then it will be very difficult. And the moment you leave your simplicity by trying to always be in the spotlight to get the respect, the appreciation, then it would be difficult. Therefore, saralata evaishnavatva, try to stay simple, we try. I hope that helps. Yes?
It helps.
Thank you.
Maharaj, in the kitchen downstairs we have a picture. Srila Prabhupada is putting salt in the pot.
Oh, nice. So then you can remember, Vaishnava should be like salt. This is what the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas actually say. This is an answer that was given by one of Ramanujacharya's disciples when he asked, how do you know who is a Vaishnava? A Vaishnava is like salt. They are always disappearing into the background. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. They don't want wealth. They don't want followers. They don't want the opposite gender's attention. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. Most of us are saying more dhanam, more janam, more sundarim, more. No, I don't want more. It's difficult, but we have to try to become simple. Not so easy to be simple in a complicated world. Yes, okay. Alexei is there, and then we'll come to you, Sudama.
It's related to this question.
Yeah, yeah. Sudama, I also.
Okay.
Because now, and as I was hearing you, and I was thinking, right, and as this is as correctly as a way of living to step in the back.
Yeah.
But then, and I thought that to do that, it's not so simple. Why? Because maybe sometimes we were hurt. Or yes. Don't feel this as a connection to Krishna. Because in the Bhagavad Gita it said that a Kaila Vaishnava, he is satisfied with himself, and he does need everything else.
But when we're not satisfied, we do need.
Yes. And in this way, maybe sometimes I do some action. Not as only because I need, I want to put as myself first, but as only maybe to have this security that everything is fine with me.
Yes, sometimes we are not able to be humble because we feel like I have my needs. Sometimes we're not able to be humble because we think if I'm humble, people will take advantage of me. Sometimes I'm not able to be humble because I think if I'm humble, I'll miss out on certain opportunities. So we are thinking like this. So the first thing is that we try to develop very stronger relationships so that there is more trust. And then when in a community there is more trust, then it's easier to be humble. So that's the first thing we do. But the second thing is, we also have to understand that if we take the humble position, Krishna will always protect us. See, one thing we're forgetting in the whole thing is that Krishna is watching everything. So if you take the humble position, Krishna will always protect. Srivas Thakur, he was doing kirtans in Navadvip. And then there was one Gopal Chapal. And he tried to defame Srivas Thakur. How did he do that? He put like wine and meat and so many things in front of his door so everyone would think, oh, this Srivas is a meat eater, a wine drinker. So when the news came in the morning, oh, Srivas Thakur, he is actually a drunkard, he is actually... Then what did Srivas Thakur do? He took the humble position. He said, yeah, he's right. He didn't defend himself. But the most amazing thing is, everyone knew that Srivas Thakur's purity was so high that this must be someone playing a trick. And so they realized later on, oh, Gopal Chappal played a trick, and Srivas didn't even defend himself. So Gopal Chappal tried to reduce his reputation, and what happened? His reputation became 10 times more glorified. Because he knew Krishna is there. Sometimes we think, I have to fight for my rights, I have to get justice, I have to set the record straight. But we also understand, you can, but Krishna is there. Krishna will help. Ultimately, Krishna will reveal whatever the truth is. So sometimes we have to step back also and trust in Krishna. That if you take the humble position, ultimately you'll never be the loser. Krishna will always. Name bhakta kaunteya pratijani hi, name bhakta pranashyati. Declare it boldly that my devotee will never be harmed. But yes, you're right, sometimes we have to take some practical measure. But let us more and more try to take the humble position. Because long term in our spiritual life, that's what's going to help us. Humility is the key. It's hard. I feel bad today, I'm talking all these topics, I need to practice it as well. But we have to talk about this. This is the essence. Yes, Prabhu?
Bharatcha, how do we see Krishna in adversity? Be it in personal or professional relationships, right? I'm kind of trying to understand this from Sri Prabhupada Leelamrita, where Prabhupada saw bomb shells dropping over Kolkata, and he says that, I see Krishna in this, but this form of Krishna I don't like. It was very beautiful. So how do we see Krishna in adversity? How do we practice towards?
We see Krishna in adversity because we see that this adversity or difficulty is Krishna coming to me, making me uncomfortable in this world so that I go to where I'm meant to be. As simple as that. If there was no adversity, if there was no difficulty, there would be no impetus to go, to move. Therefore, Krishna arranges all these things and he comes. When Parikshit got cursed, then he said, today Krishna came to me. But today Krishna came to me in the form of the curse of a Brahmin boy. So he saw that that curse was Krishna coming to me to tell me, now okay, 7 days, wrap it up, get out of this world. So every time we go through a difficulty, we can remember Krishna is saying, how long you want to stay here? You want to keep struggling here? We keep trying to find solutions when we have problems. There's no solution. The only solution is get out. No, there must be a solution. I'm sure there's a solution. I'm sure there's a way out of this problem. No, there's not. Because even if you solve it, another problem will come. So our basic problem is that when we have difficulties and adversity, we rack our brains and we bang our head against the wall trying to make it work, make it work, make it work. We just keep banging our head against the wall. When actually Krishna is trying to tell us it will never work. You gotta get out. So how many times will we have to be defeated by Krishna before we get the lesson? Krishna, how many times? So we have to. So that's how we see adversity, that this is Krishna reminding me. You know. One time Prabhupada said, the job of Krishna and the job of Maya is the same. Really? Prabhupada said, Krishna is like the smiling God who comes in front of you with two arms and says, come now to the spiritual world, come with me. And Prabhupada said, and if you don't accept Krishna's arms like this, then Krishna comes in the form of Maya behind you and gives you a good kick. Have you seen? So like, how you want to go if there's a swimming pool and it's freezing cold? How you want to go? Either you can go step by step and just take your own, or someone can come from the back and push you. Which one you want to do? If you want to take a plaster off, either you can go under the tap and slowly, slowly take it off by yourself, or you go whoop. Which one you want to do? So the job of Krishna, the job of Maya is the same. So all of these difficulties of life is our way. Go out. Is it okay? It's not okay, I mean. Yes, Prabhu.
What makes their heart soft?
Oh, beautiful question. What makes someone's heart soft? First, I think two things can make, I mean, the two immediate things that come is the, sometimes the harsh experiences of this material world can make you soft, and sometimes the love of the Vaishnavas can also make you soft. When a Vaishnav comes to you and conquers your heart, when a Vaishnav comes to you and serves you with such love, then immediately you're... Have you seen sometimes parents, that, you know, parents are very, very strong, very, very, you know, but sometimes their child will come in front of them, you know, some smile, some broken word, immediately the parent is like completely disarmed by the charm of the child. So one way to become soft is the love of the Vaishnavas will make us soft. And the other way to become soft is sometimes the material world will break us. Burijan Prabhu, he was in Vrindavan. Have you seen in Vrindavan they have sugarcane machines? So you see there's a big wheel, and then they put the cane in, and then it crushes the cane, and then the juice comes out. So he made a prayer. May the hard, crushing wheel of life extract some humility from my offense-hardened heart. And may the nectar of that humility give rise to pure love for Krishna. So sometimes the harshness of this world breaks us down. And then we feel, okay, now I just have to surrender. And then yes, prasadam and kirtan, these things are all softening our heart. Krishna katha, when we hear about Krishna, it softens our heart. When we serve Vaishnavas, it softens our heart. Yeah, it's a very beautiful question you ask, because ultimately we need to develop a soft heart. The Bhagavatam says that if you chant Hare Krishna and you don't experience tears coming from your eyes and you don't experience the hairs of your body standing on end, then you must understand you have a steel-framed heart that's become so hard from so many years of offenses. That this is us. So we have to become kind. We have to become a little soft. We have to overcome our harshness, judgmental mentality. Thank you. Very beautiful question. You please tell us, what is your reflection? How should we develop soft heart? Do you have some idea? Okay. You can say in Russian.
Yes. I will try, but it's,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a big question for me.
Yes, yes. Very nice question.
To be in their society, in their society of devotees.
Yes.
To serve them.
Чтобы они шлифовали. Если камешки имеют острые углы, то преданные.
they help, they will help us to polish us when we have
sharp edges.
Yes.
And in order to have a humility, we need to have a certain spiritual experience.
Very nice. Yeah. Thank you. I don't know the time. Because one more. For me, but all of you. Okay, but if someone needs to go, please, you don't feel... we can take a few more if anyone would like to.
Right, there are two questions from the online devotees. Both are linked to preaching. One is, can you share any tips that devotees shall remember who are interested in preaching service in our Krishna conscious movement? And the another question is, being a student in the science field, how can I preach Krishna consciousness to the scientists?
So, someone is in the science field, and how can they preach Krishna consciousness to the scientists? Yes, we have to show the world that Krishna consciousness is not a religion. Krishna consciousness is a spiritual science. Srila Prabhupada never taught Krishna consciousness as a religion. He said, this is a science, there's a hypothesis, there's an experiment, and there's a conclusion. And practicing Krishna consciousness doesn't require any more faith than the faith you already put in science. To believe that the world came from the pores of Mahavishnu doesn't require any more faith than the faith it requires to say everything was concentrated at a single point at a superheated temperature and then it exploded and everything came about. Same amount of faith required. So people have this notion that science is fact and religion is some kind of faith. No, that's a complete untruth. So we have to go in the world and we have to show this works. This is a science. You can experience it, you can observe it, you can perceive it. But you have to become a spiritual scientist. You have to live it in your life. We have to go out in the world and tell them, you believe in evolutionary theory, but then what about all of this evidence that goes against the theory? Why are you filtering that out of the world? Our devotee has written, no? Forbidden archaeology. Michael Cremo, Drutakarma Prabhu. We have to challenge them. You're saying the Big Bang? Where? Where is your evidence? You see, they just put it up in a museum, spend millions of pounds making some model, and then they write some plaque, you know, 5 billion years ago, the temperature changed by 0.0035%. And then this species became extinct and everyone says, oh wow, fascinating. Why? Where's the proof? But no, they spent so much money making the model, it must be true. No. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada wanted to create the Vedic planetarium because he says that no, there's no alternative. Therefore, everyone is believing this because there's no alternative explanation. So we must give an explanation. So we're so fortunate we have scriptures which can give an explanation for all these things. So we have to become qualified, we have to become learned, and we have to be able to explain Krishna consciousness in scientific terms. And we have to show people that as much faith as you put, we're not asking for any more faith than that. We have to prove this. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada was so bold. He was going across the world and he said, I'm challenging them all. I'm challenging all professors. Come, I will speak to them. Let them convince me. So yes, this is preaching. And what examples? If you want to learn preaching, Srila Prabhupada is the best example. Who can be a better preacher than Srila Prabhupada? He knew how to make... Preacher means make it clear, make it practical, make it logical, scientific, and make it attractive for people. These are the things that a preacher does. So Srila Prabhupada was doing that. You can also study, if you want to learn preaching, you can study the life of Narad Muni. He's also a great preacher. He preached to everyone, kings, to young boys, to hunters, to... In so many ways he preached. So you can... Yes. Jare deka atare kaha Krishna upadesh amara agyaya guru anatare edesh. This is perhaps the most quoted verse of Srila Prabhupada from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Whoever you meet, whoever you see, tell them about Krishna. So everyone should be a preacher. Everyone should share Krishna consciousness and learn the art, because the world is on fire. The world is on fire. And we have to go out there and try to share with people how to get out.
Thank you. Thank
you. Okay, yes. I think maybe last question, and then because it's getting late and then Prashadam is there.
Yeah.
I
have only one question for you.
Okay. Might be, to end with this, maybe a challenging question. We say that we came from the spiritual world.
We came from the spiritual world, yes.
Why did we come? When we are full cognizant that we are servants of the Lord.
Why did we decide to come here? Why did the jiva leave the spiritual world? Thank you for asking this question. This question has been discussed and debated. The way Srila Prabhupada generally explained it is he said, we exist in the spiritual world in a relationship of love with Krishna. And in order for there to be love, there must be free will. And in order for there to be free will, there must be the opportunity of different options. So when the jiva is in the spiritual world, Krishna bahir mukha hoya bhoga vancha kare, and the jiva looks slightly away from Krishna, then it's not that the jiva is dissatisfied or the jiva is in ignorance, but the jiva just has some curiosity. Like, what would it be like to be separate from Krishna? Just some curiosity. But from that initial curiosity, then they become more and more implicated in the material world. So the way Srila Prabhupada generally explained it is that we left the spiritual world because of curiosity. And curiosity can exist because we have free will. But now let me tell you another thing. This is a little scientific, but if you understand this, you'll understand why it's so difficult to answer this question. Okay? So just concentrate a few minutes. If you imagine this is the Earth planet, and the Earth planet has its time frame, isn't it? Like we have 365 days in a year. Now what happens is as you go higher in the universe, then time dilates. You understand? So if you're now at Brahma Loka, which is the highest planet, then one day on Brahma Loka is like 6 months on the Earth planet. So Earth planet is here, but as you go up in the universe, time is dilating. Now when you get to the edge of the material universe, then time is zero. Okay? So now when you go into the spiritual world, there's no time. There's no time anymore. So spiritual world is a timeless place. Now let me ask you the question. Can you leave a timeless place? If you say yes, my next question to you is, when did you leave? Can you leave a timeless place? No. Can you re-enter a timeless place? Because if you say yes, the next question I'm going to ask you is, when did you re-enter? But there's no time there. So when we say the jiva left the spiritual world, the jiva, it doesn't actually, it's not an English statement you can make, because we're dealing with two different time dimensions. So words are limited in explaining spiritual phenomena, because we are thinking we were in the spiritual world and then we had a curiosity and then we left and now we're here and then one day we'll go back, and we're seeing it like a timeline. But it's not like a timeline, because you're dealing with a timeless place and a place where there is time. And so when you're trying to link those two dimensions through English language, it doesn't make any sense, because you're dealing with different time dimensions. That's why, to answer this question, why did the jiva leave the spiritual world, you can't explain it in English language. Did the jiva leave the spiritual world? Yes. Did the jiva leave the spiritual world? No. But that doesn't make sense. Yes. It's not meant to make logical sense, because you're dealing with a spirit. Like if I say to you, okay, let me ask you a question. Who came first, the father or the son? What do you think?
The father.
Father, obviously, isn't it? You agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, the father must have come before the son. Wrong. Because until the son was born, was he a father? Was he?
No.
So the son is born first and then the father is born. Is that what you're now telling me? You've decided to change your position? Is it? First, no, but the son is born and then he's a father. Before that, he's just a man. So first the son has to be born, then he becomes a father. So which one is true? Which one is true?
Both.
But they don't, but they're contradictory. Yeah, that's fine. But they're still both true. So did the jiva leave the spiritual world? Yes. Did the jiva leave the spiritual world? No. It's fine. It's settled.